We would always want anybody who's been a Buffalo Bill to feel welcome to come back, and they have wanted to come back, which I think says a lot. The other piece is you have to be a little bit careful from an evaluation standpoint and be objective of, are we being a little biased in saying, hey, okay, yeah, we know this player, but check yourself and making sure, hey, is this the right move for us, whoever it is? Because it's real easy to go, yeah, oh yeah, this felt good before, but what's most important for our team is it best for us now? Who the player is now as opposed to who they were whenever the player left here.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott detailing, you know, some of the Bills' thought process in bringing back former players. Jordan Phillips, Jordan Poyer, Gabe Davis, all on the practice squad right now ahead of the Baltimore game. Injury designations coming out later today as the Bills get to practice. The same true for Baltimore. We'll dig into Bills-Ravens with Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast, Locked On First Read podcast, Locked On NFL Scouting. Bills squad with me and Jerry Ostrowski, thejoemarino.com. He's a grinder. He does it all. And now we're going to get a take on Gabe Davis. Joe, good morning. We'll get the Gabe Davis thing in early. He's on the practice squad, and then we'll get to Baltimore. But what's your takeaway on the move to add the former Bills receiver to this year's practice squad?
Well, good morning, guys, and it's good to be here in week one, and obviously another reunion. Gabe Davis back in the mix, and I think for the timing and what the expectation should be for Gabe Davis, it makes sense to me. It's not like the Bills signed him, you know, months ago and gave him a lucrative deal and said, hey, you're going to be a focal point of our passing game. It's the exact opposite of that. It's a September signing to the practice squad as the ninth receiver on the team. And so I don't really see the harm. I know that there's some people with some big opinions on this, but I think you can do a whole lot worse than your ninth receiver being Gabe Davis. And as he works back from this meniscus injury, if you need him somewhere this season, it'd be nice to have in your back pocket. But that's all it is. I think it's just about being able to strengthen your depth in case you need it. And I don't see that as a bad thing. So again, my issues with Gabe Davis were if he's a top option for your passing game, and there's nothing about this move that signals that that's the intent.
If he were to play, Joe, because that's where I am. I mean, I think he, at that age, is going to want to play. And yeah. If he does, I guess going back to what the Joe Brady offense was at the end a couple of years ago and now what it's kind of morphed into, if he were to see the field, what would it look like to you?
Well, I think that's a fair call out, Joe. I mean, it's a 26-year-old receiver that last year was signed to a pretty big 3-year deal with the Jaguars. And I think that's why it's important to look at this from Gabe's perspective, too. And let's just be honest, he probably didn't have a lot of opportunities. You know, this is an injured receiver that I think has been underwhelming for the last two seasons. And, you know, teams weren't lining up to give him that opportunity. And I think that says a lot about where his market was truly at, that it resolves to him coming back on the Bills practice squad. And so I think that Gabe probably took the opportunity that he had. And we've seen players spend a year in Buffalo and not even do anything. And then they get more opportunities. You know, you think about a Mitch Trubisky and what happened there, Deonte Hardy, Trent Sherfield. These guys went on to go have opportunities in the future. And I think for Gabe, it's probably more than anything a rehab year, not only for the injury, but maybe for his overall projection as a player moving forward. And so I think this is just what it came down to for Gabe. He met with the Giants. He met with the Steelers. Those were better opportunities. They didn't offer him anything, and this is where he's at.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joining us here on WGR and on the Western Hotline. Joe, in our conversation yesterday on the Bills Squad show about Bills and Ravens, thought you had an interesting kind of opening remark about this matchup. It almost feels like you want to warn people ahead of time to not get too invested in what the Bills defense does because of the matchup, because of the challenge. There's a lot of factors here, but basically don't write the book on the Bills defense on Monday at 8 a.m.
Yeah, and I feel like we're going to want to. You know, the Bills have obviously been intentional about upgrading a lot of components of their defense, whether that's personnel or coaching. And, you know, you get this Ravens team, and yeah, I think you did a lot of this with the Ravens in mind, and right, you got to be this defense that can beat Baltimore, that can beat Kansas City in the playoffs. So yeah, that's certainly part of it, but I mean, talk about just terrible timing. You're talking about a week one matchup against Baltimore, that has a ton of continuity. They got a new left guard, and they added DeAndre Hopkins. Outside of that, everything's back. And you're talking about a team that scored 31 points per game, number one in EPA per play. You know, however you want to measure offense, they were amazing. Number one in the red zone, number three on third downs, most yards per most passing yards per passing down, most rushing yards per rushing down. This team is awesome. And you have a Bills defense that's coming in here. They're young on the D-line. It's game one. We don't know who to explain CB2. And even if it is Trey White, you're not super comfortable there. Who knows what Cole Bishop's going to be, especially in week one. So it's just not, to me, a great measuring stick. But it's going to be. It's going to be a measuring stick for where this Bills defense is. And, you know, you don't even get Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi for six more weeks. And so I would just look. I think the Bills have a great chance to win the game. The Bills have won three of the last four against Baltimore. But if this is going to be the talk, is, you know, how the success of the defensive moves this offseason will not be fully answered in week one. And I think that's the right word, caution. I think we need to be cautious against allowing ourselves to do that.
The Bills are going to lean heavily on some younger players, you know, in part because of some of the players you just mentioned are going to be out. We'll see what happens with Tre'Davious White. But Deion Walker, TJ Sanders, like what are they in for this week? A bit of the trench matchup, what Baltimore offers up there, dealing with Lamar Jackson, dealing with Derrick Henry, the young defensive tackles that are going to be called upon, what awaits them?
Yeah, it's an interesting part of this game. And obviously the Bills are going to rotate. Ed Oliver will probably play 65-70% of snaps. Daquan Jones will be around 50, but then you've got a lot of snaps that are there for the taking, and I assume that Walker and Sanders will get a good amount of them. Obviously, we know that there's a dynamic run scheme here with Baltimore. They show up with 200 rushing yards basically every week, and it's a tough assignment, and we know about Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and the skill that they have, but when you look at this interior offensive line, I think they've got a top three center in the game in Tyler Linderbaum. He's interesting. He's like barely 300 pounds, super athletic, but he's a very, very multifaceted blocker with what he can bring in space, what he can bring in the run game and in pass protection. But then the guards on either side of him are where they might be a little shaky for Baltimore. Their left guard, Andrew Voorhees, was a 2023 seventh round pick. He played like 250 snaps last year, and he's taking over for Patrick McCarrie. So that's a new starter for them. You feel like that should be an opportunity for the Bills to maybe have some matchup advantages. Then at right guard, it's Daniel Falele, who, you know, started his career at right tackle, kicks inside the guard. He's like 400 pounds. He's massive, just this big mauling dude. But what do the Bills have? They have quickness with their defensive tackles, and hopefully you can stress that movement ability of Falele, who, you know, look, for 400 pounds, he moves well, but he's still really, really big. And so you have three unique interior offensive linemen, and, you know, hopefully the Bills can find some matchup wins there and ultimately put this Ravens offense in a situation where they're not always on rhythm, right? You got to get them out of that rhythm, get them in some long and late downs, and hopefully the Bills can get some wins up front based on some of these matchups.
You know, Joe, I was looking earlier that the 36 snaps that Taron Johnson played on defense in the playoff game were the fewest that he had played for the Bills in a game he didn't get hurt in years. Still, it was still over 60%, but that's not as high a rate as you normally see. And here's this likely injury, and even Pat Ricard is banged up. I wonder what you think about how the Bills will use Johnson, something we talked a lot about before that playoff game, and whether or not those injuries could even impact how much they use him, given what Baltimore does.
Yeah, I'm curious to see Baltimore's side of that because, you know, they love to put all those big bodies on the field. And, you know, if they don't have that fullback, and, you know, maybe they'll go six offensive linemen. They do have another good blocking tight end in Charlie Kolar. So I think they'll want to use their bigger formations as much as they can. But that does have an influence on Taron Johnson's role. And that's an interesting number. I didn't know that about him. But, you know, the Bills will play a little bit more base defense against Baltimore. When they're in nickel, Taron Johnson's going to be the nickel. But, you know, I get a lot of questions about, well, you know, we don't like to go out of nickel because that means Taron Johnson's off the field. So can he play outside corner? Can he play safety? The answer to that is no. Like, he's never done that. He's never played an outside corner. He's never played safety. The Bills have told us through their history, when they go base defense, a linebacker comes in, Taron Johnson comes out. And so when the Bills are in nickel, Taron will be on the field. When they're not, it'll be Dorian Williams or whatever different sub packages they go into, whether that's Cam Lewis as a dime player or what the situation is going to be. But I think they want Taron on the field as much as possible, but that does mean that they have to be in that nickel defense.
And to what degree did that work, too? Like, would you think the Bills will say that, hey, we sold out to stop the run, we took Henry out of the game, but we kept him in check, and that we should run that back as a strategy?
Well, I think so. I think you need to lean into some more heavier box looks with bigger personnel against Baltimore. You know, I thought that was a big mistake they made in week four. Now, obviously, the second level of that defense was Baylen Specter, Dorian Williams, and Cam Lewis. Like, can we be honest about that week four matchup and who the Bills didn't have and who was on the field? You know, now they were a lot better when it came to the divisional round game. But I think what you have to do is force Lamar Jackson to be the player that beats you throwing the football. And he certainly can. I'm not saying that Lamar Jackson's not a good thrower. But you cannot sit there and just play light boxes and get run into oblivion by Baltimore, because they can't do that. And so I do think that loading up on the box, you know, playing some heavier personnel is going to give you your best chance to try to bottle up that run as best you can and say, hey, if you're really going to beat us up, it's going to be because Lamar Jackson makes special throws. And I think you have to live with the variance that could exist within that.
To that point, Joe, what I wanted to ask you was, which, if you have an answer to this, it might not be a very specific answer, but which positional group do you feel like Lamar challenges the most? I feel like I'm remembering Lorenzo Alexander saying eye discipline however long ago, or maybe it's somebody else. Mm-hmm. Is it the safeties? Is it the linebackers? Is it the corners? Is it the edge rushers who have to stay in, you know, maintain, contain? Like, which group do you feel like has to have the biggest game for the Bills to make sure that Lamar does not pick them apart, does not beat them the way he can?
Yeah, I can certainly say every position, but I know that's not what you asked. I think I would want to bring up the edge group, because this is the group of players that, you know, they have to contain. You know, they cannot get too far up the field on their rush. They cannot go inside and not finish, you know, and if that happens and you create these escape outlets for Lamar Jackson to then have more time to look down the field, which, you know, obviously he can make those throws, or run, which obviously he can make those plays. And I think those are the players that it really comes down to, being disciplined with your edge rush, and you want to get after Lamar, but, you know, there's that risk reward of, hey, he's hard to tackle. And so I think it puts a lot of stress on playing under control, being disciplined, but also go try to make plays. And I think the edge group is the position group that's under the most stress. But, you know, look, you're talking about having to defend two plays a lot of times, the first play and then the second play that Lamar is able to extend, and that just puts stress on everybody. But I think at the top of that list is the edge group.
What level of confidence will you have if Tre'Davious White is looking like he won't play?
I'm concerned regardless. You know, if Trey's available, I think that's helpful, because I think he's probably the Bills' best option. But, you know, he's going to be really challenged to tackle and play the run, and that's never been Tre'Davious White's strength, even in his prime. And then if it's not Trey White, you have an inexperienced player, probably, right? Jamarcus Ingram, maybe even Dorian Strong. I'm not ruling out Dane Jackson. And those players probably won't be as good as in coverage as Trey White. So I think you got a challenge to overcome there. And I think you'll have to scheme up ways to help there. You have to shade your safety to that side. You probably need to, you know, make sure that there's extra run support to that side as well. It's definitely an area of concern for the Bills in this game.
On the offensive side, Joe, I know you're bullish on Dalton Kincaid this year. And here we go. It feels like it's been a bit of a quiet preseason for him, right? He had a little bit of a knock here and there. But here we go, year three for him. I feel like the Joe Brady continuity could be a big part of this. Allen has actively said he needs to be better for Kincaid. And now a second straight year in this offense, and maybe I don't know, is they're less trying to find an identity as they are kind of spreading their legs, stretching their legs, I should say, stretching their legs and getting comfortable in what they are. Can Kincaid find what Bills fans have been looking for him?
Well, I think he's got the skill set to do it. He's got 2 years in the league. I've got 2 years of really good separation data. I've got 2 years of elite yards after catch data. It just comes down to, you know, how the Bills are going to deploy him, and if him and Josh Allen can get on the same page with a higher level of consistency. I mean, there's just too many off-target throws, just not enough good results when the Bills targeted Dalton Kincaid. And so I'm hoping that in year three, it all comes together, because I really like, in a vacuum, his skill set. Of course, I love Josh Allen. I like a lot about Joe Brady. Hopefully that can all come together this year, and it's, you know, he fulfills the promise that everyone had back when he was drafted in the first round. And, you know, is this the Bills', you know, big time answer at tight end? I think there's a chance that it can happen. I really like the skill set. It should have been a huge point of emphasis for everyone involved this offseason to, you know, put in the work to maximize the investment here in Kincaid. And, you know, I think it's been quiet because I think everyone kind of got burned last year. And you, like, I think if you're watching the camp practices, I think you think, wow, this looks pretty good, but you don't necessarily want to go all in. And so I think everyone's just kind of willing to let it play out. And, you know, because of my confidence in the skill set and the people involved, I do have confidence here, but obviously it needs to come together. The Ravens were not super good last year at defending tight ends. In fact, they gave up the second most yards in the league to inline targets. So that should be an opportunity in week one. Same with running backs. The Ravens actually gave up the most passing yards per game to backfield targets last year. So this could be a good opportunity for the Bills to work the ball to running backs and tight ends in the passing game and challenge Baltimore in an area that they had some struggles last year.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that before the playoff game last year. Did the Ravens change anything drastically defensively in the offseason that would have you thinking differently about what the offensive game plan would look like?
Well, I think they got better in the secondary for sure. You know, they have Nate Wiggins, who was their first-round pick last year at corner. He had a good rookie season. Now he's in year two, so I'm sure they're expecting – some growth there. And then Brandon Stevens was like the bad player in that secondary last year, and he's now on the Jets and he's gone. And I think they've upgraded that spot. And whether that's Jair Alexander or it's Chidobe Awuzie, who's a good veteran corner in the league, I think they're going to be better in that spot, which then I think allows Marlon Humphrey to stay more consistently in the slot. And then they get Malachi Starks, who I think very highly of, at safety with their first round pick to go with Kyle Hamilton. I think they're a lot more sure and a lot more experience with what they have in their secondary this year. But I think where you probably have an opportunity is that linebacker next to Roquan Smith. It's going to be Trenton Simpson, who was a third-round pick in 2023. He was benched last year for performance, and he's staring at the opportunity again to step in there, and I think that's the player that you want to put under stress, whether that is the tight ends or the running backs, and you know, dare him to be a guy that plays a whole lot better than he's shown to this point in his career. So I think they're a lot better in the secondary. They might not have quite as much depth with their down lineman up front, but that linebacker two spot is definitely an area that you can exploit.
Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast. You can subscribe to the Locked On Bills podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and give him a listen on the regular. Joe will chat every Wednesday. Good luck this season, I guess, to all of us, you know. On ESPN right now, they're asking which team needs it more, Bills or Ravens, and I don't know if I have an answer for that. I would say the Ravens, based on the schedule. Like, if you really look at all of the good teams and their schedules, the Bills really, on paper right now, have the smoothest road, and their hardest games are at home.
They have it up there right now. Baltimore, fourth hardest schedule in the AFC. I don't know what they're doing that by.
So I might say the Ravens need it more just based on that. Like, if the Bills win, I don't know if you're going to catch them, because if they can, with everything we just laid out about their defense, win a game against the toughest team they're going to play, I don't know how you're going to catch them down two for the one seed race if you're Baltimore. So I might think that Baltimore needs it more.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Jeremy. And I mean, it's a little bit of the Bills-Chiefs conversation where Baltimore's gone to Buffalo twice in the postseason and lost. They probably want to get Buffalo in Baltimore if they can, and this will be a big, you know, head-to-head tiebreaker situation. And you know, it's obviously the Bills lost this game last year and still got to host Baltimore and beat them in the postseason. So like, there's your silver lining if that happens this year. But you know, I think Baltimore wants to get some momentum. Like, I think that's probably an under-discussed talking point, is some of the struggles that Baltimore's had early in the season, particularly on the defensive side of the football in recent years. And so I think they want to start fast, and obviously a win on the road against the Bills will jumpstart their year.
Baltimore started 0-2 last year. Of course, they had that loss in Kansas City really close. They were 0-2 to start the year. All right, Joe, thanks. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast. We chat with them every Wednesday. This is how you know it's football season. We had Howard pick the Bills yesterday. We got Joe Marino today, along with updates from practice as well. We're talking to Sal every day. The 506 map comes out probably tomorrow. also, or today rather, tomorrow today, yeah. also we're going to get our fantastic four-way parlay. Mm-hmm. Thursday night football. Let's go. Let's go. Collinsworth and Tirico.
Collinsworth, I saw he's they're extending him. Collinsworth.
He's been doing it forever.
Oh, yeah. Forever. 90s, right?
Yeah, long time.
Can't be before that. He played in the 80s, I think. When does he start? Is he like? Is he on TV when the Bills are going to Super Bowls? Collinsworth?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. When he's his first years?
Yeah, when is he first on television?
How old do you think he is now, by the way, Collinsworth?
Collinsworth, 61.
He's 66. He is 66. He started his broadcasting career with Bob Trumpy in 1989 on Inside the NFL. He was a reporter.
Okay.
In 1990, became part of NFL Broadcast's pregame show.
So 35 years.
NFL on Fox in 1998. Yeah.
35 years.
Long time.
Wow. We didn't talk to Joe about this, and I wonder even if this would be valuable. I'm looking at Cole Bishop's game logs from last year. You know, he played a good amount in both Raven games last year.
Really?
I don't know if there's anything to be learned there about what he does Sunday. He played 72% of the snaps in the regular season game and 66% in the playoff game because Rapp got hurt, right, in the playoff game.
Yep.
So he ended up playing in both.
Looking back to, this is something we kind of got to, how the Ravens are talking about this game and treating it like they owe the Bills something, because Bills fans, you know how this goes. Like, your team loses and you feel like it was your own team's fault more than you got beat. That's how Baltimore feels about this game. The playoff game here, Baltimore outgained the Bills by 140 yards on offense.
Mm-hmm.
They, of course, had the 3 turnovers, 5 penalties. But, I mean, Lamar passed the ball almost at will.
Mm-hmm.
25 attempts, 240 yards. Yards per play in that game, Bills 4.6, Ravens 7.3. So,
wow.
If the Ravens, kind of what Joe was saying there, like if the Ravens offense has itself a day, you got to be careful. We got to be careful with this one that we don't think that represents there have been no upgrades to the defense. TJ Sanders, I just saw Brian Baldinger tweeting out a Baldy's breakdown on TJ Sanders that was pretty complimentary. So you can check that out. But Sanders, Deion Walker, whether you want to include Landon Jackson in this, and Maxwell Harrison, we got to wait a couple weeks. Michael Hoyt. Like, the Bills could be missing half of their defense for this game.
Well, the Ravens will not have their leading receiver from that playoff game. Ian Rapport just tweeted out that Isaiah Likely not expected to play against the Bills.
Okay. No Likely. They will, of course, have their best receiver, who is Zay Flowers, who they did not have in the playoff game.
So Flowers in, Likely out.
Yep. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Give us a ring. Wide open phone lines on Gabe Davis. How about that question? Who needs this one more? Bills or Ravens? I think both teams could expect to lose it and be just fine. Ravens lost their opener last year. They're opening 2 games last year. They were fine. Bills lost to the Ravens last year. They were fine. Isaiah Likely, not likely. Isaiah not likely to play.
Mm.
Oh, sorry. All right, we'll go to a break immediately. Sorry about that.